From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. It has been almost 2 months since the deadly fire in Maui that destroyed the town of Lahaina. It's been close to 5 years since a fire decimated the town of Paradise, California. Here's the question. Could an aging utility infrastructure, along with wildfire risk, be the major culprit behind these disasters? Wall Street Journal reporter and author of the book California Burning, Catherine Blunt, is joining us today to talk more about this. Catherine, I want to welcome you to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Catherine, I know that you cover renewable energy and utilities for the Wall Street Journal, and your team reported very extensively on PNG in California. So can we start there first and what your team discovered in the reporting and all of the investigating that you did?
We began looking closely at PG&E or Pacific Gas and Electric in late 2018 after the campfire, which you referenced earlier. It was a really devastating disaster that occurred in November when a hook on a century-old transmission tower broke and dropped a live wire. The wire showered the ground with sparks, and within a matter of minutes, the fire was entirely out of control. It destroyed the town of Paradise and several nearby communities. 84 people died. And so, of course, we wanted to take a close look at the circumstances that led to this particular disaster, as well as kind of a broader set of challenges that has created so much existential risk for this company over the last couple decades or so. And there's a lot of things to unpack there. There's regulatory challenges, political challenges, and of course, climate change, which has made the consequence of infrastructure failure much higher.
So with that, you know, really what this came down to, and then you ended up writing the book, California Burning, is did the company itself, really fall apart after the campfire, in the sense that, you know, they were a legacy company, right? And it was almost like all of a sudden realizing that maybe they hadn't taken proper action even years before this fire.
The company fell apart in a sense. It sought bankruptcy protection following the campfire because it owed an estimated $30 billion in liabilities associated with damages from the campfire, as well as a series of fires that occurred in 2017 for different reasons. Those fires mostly occurred when tree branches and debris came into contact with live wires during windstorms. And so as a result of this, the company, of course, carried a very significant financial burden and had a lot of consequences for victims of the fires. As a utility company, as a provider of a critical service, a company can't truly fall apart in the sense that it won't go out of business. There's always going to be some sort of backstop. But it was a real reckoning, to your point. I mean, it was the realization that the company hadn't done nearly enough to address wildfire risk on multiple fronts, despite mounting evidence that this would become a major issue in Northern California, much more so than it has been historically as a result of several periods of protracted drought, again, made worse by climate change, and the death of tens of millions of trees, making it so that the likelihood of a fire barreling out of control, feasting on all that fuel, is much higher.
So Catherine, I know in your book, you state that PNG prioritized, really profit, right? And when that happened, a lot of power lines stopped being checked. And my understanding is that was it really just a rusted hook that was purchased back in 1921? I mean, this split in two, and that's what really started the wildfire in California in 2018.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing to think about. We're talking about the campfire, it was original infrastructure purchased, it's somewhere between probably 1919 and 1921 for pennies. And it was installed by the only real competitor that PG&E ever had, a company called Great Western Power that was building some of the first transmission lines in the country to support hydroelectric development in the Sierra Nevada. And that hook had been in place for nearly 100 years, wearing down little by little with every windstorm until one day it broke nearly in half and it dropped the wire that ignited the fire. And, the wear on that hook had been visible for a long time, but because the company had, over the course of time, scaled back the frequency of its inspections, as well as the thoroughness of its inspections. Inspectors didn't realize the extent of the wear on that particular piece of hardware until that disaster, and that's what it took. And you know, the idea of profits over safety when you're talking about a utility company, yes, that is that it was definitely part of the problem for PG&E over the years. Not to get too complicated, but utilities make money on large capital investments that improve the overall value of their systems. They do not make money on day-to-day maintenance and inspection processes. They can recover those costs, but they don't profit on them. And so kind of over time, you saw the company try to do more to invest capital. And part of the way that it did that was to reduce the amount of money that it was spending on maintenance and inspections. And, you know, it's simple enough to understand. And it's one of those things that it plays out very slowly over the course of many years until a disaster disrupts the pattern.
So I want to go to Maui now, August 8th, and this massive wildfire. And it is still, I think, so hard for so many of us to even wrap our heads around because of how quickly this fire spread, how many lives were lost, how many people are still missing. I mean, it literally destroyed the town of Lahaina. And yet there are similarities with Paradise, California and Lahaina in the sense that my understanding is that Hawaiian Electric was slow to update their power lines, right? Even though they knew there was wildfire threat, they knew the infrastructure was aging. So can you speak on that as well?
Sure. So I'll say, of course, off the top, we don't know exactly what caused the fire that destroyed the town of Lahaina. There hasn't been an official determination on that. Hawaiian Electric has said unequivocally that it does not believe that its infrastructure was responsible for this. But there's several investigations ongoing, and we will get clarity on that. There are indications the power lines could be involved. So that's, why we're having this particular conversation. Mm-hmm. And yes, so in 2019, Hawaiian Electric made an announcement that it had been observing PG&E's experience in California and doing some of its own analysis and determined that it needed to do more to address wildfire risk. But it wasn't until last year that the company filed a formal plan with regulators outlining what it wanted to do and the type of money that it wanted to spend to upgrade the system to address specifically wildfire risk as well as other climate change driven risks. And it's easy to say in hindsight that the company was moving slowly, right? I mean, the utility industry is notoriously slow moving. The regulatory process is slow. The process of making these types of plans can take a long time. The company says it wasn't taking a long time. It brought in a consultant to make recommendations. It took those recommendations from that consultant and finally came up with a plan. And the regulatory process is what it is. And, you know, there's some truth in that in the sense that this is kind of par for the course for the industry. That being said, climate change is changing the landscape in ways that it's hard to foresee, right? I mean, risk is changing and escalating quickly. And there's really tough questions to be asked of companies as to whether they're moving fast enough, generally speaking, right? I mean, the old ways of doing things and the speed at which these companies have been moving is probably not fast enough broadly.
Mm-hmm. So can we talk then about a broader idea of utility companies? Is it a fair assessment to say that some utility companies are really pushing back on this idea to cut power when we see a risk of wildfire increasing? And I asked that question because I know that there was a lot of speculation, a lot of people questioning in Lahaina, why didn't they shut off the power, you know, when they knew these winds were whipping up, when it was still just a brush fire. And why are utility companies hesitant to do that?
Yeah, this is a very interesting issue to explore. So it was really the California utilities that kind of pioneered this particular wildfire mitigation tool, that is proactively turning off the power ahead of windstorms. It was first San Diego Gas and Electric, did it back in 2013 for the first time. Southern California Edison has done it periodically. PG&E has used it most frequently and with the greatest scope. And when PG&E started doing it on a frequent basis, it was in fact very controversial because it's difficult to be in for customers to be in the dark for any mm-hmm. amount of time, especially those who rely on it for medical reasons or have other you know, particular needs that make it so that if the power is out for even a matter of hours, it can be challenging. In some cases, it can be life-threatening. So when you think about the degree to which we rely on electricity, I mean, it's foundational to a lot of critical infrastructure. I mean, again, people who rely on it for medical reasons, maybe to keep medications refrigerated or to charge mm-hmm. their wheelchairs, to run ventilators. And when the power is out for a number of days, I mean, not only is it difficult for some people to survive, but there's like a great deal of economic loss that can occur, right, by forcing business mm-hmm. closures. It's not an easy decision to make. And really, in order to do it effectively and safely, a utility needs to have like a formal plan in place for how to execute this. It needs to know like which circuits it could potentially spare, who's got backup power, make sure that, you know, hospitals and other places are like prepared to deal with something like this. And it's been interesting because, you know, Hawaiian Electric at the time of this fire did not have a formal plan in place to do it. So just to kind of do it, to throw the switch, so to speak, would have been pretty dangerous and it would have created a lot of chaos. I mean, there's legitimate criticism as to why it didn't have a plan in place to do that when it's been pretty much observed that it's the best practice of the California utilities in dealing with fire risk. But it's not an outlier. There's other utilities across the West that don't have plans in place. And there is a number of them that are trying to do that right now. But obviously, we see the risk that can result for not having a good plan in place to do that, not only from a safety standpoint, but also from a liability standpoint. There's a couple of utilities now that are facing lawsuits for basically negligence charges, being negligent and failing to have the proper plan in place, the protocols in place to do that and to do that effectively.
Mm. So what's interesting to me is that I wonder if sometimes it is we want to place blame, right? When these disasters happen, when so many lives are lost, it's like you want to place blame so that we almost feel a sense of control to say, okay, this is why this happened. This, you know, X company was at fault and we can move forward. Instead of maybe, and not saying that any of these companies very well may have fault, instead of maybe looking at the deeper issue, which you have brought up, is climate change. And the fact that we don't seem to have control over that right now because there are so many not willing to make changes and sacrifices to try to get climate change under control. So how much do you think, Catherine, that plays into it of we just want to place blame and not look at the broader reasons as to why we're seeing more wildfires like this?
Yes, I think that there's certainly a desire after any sort of disaster to point a finger, to have a single person or a single company or a single subset of people to blame. And I think that's really, frankly, the wrong way to think about these types of disasters mm-hmm. that really reveal a lot of challenges in like the system, like the way that they're systemic problems, right? And one of the mm-hmm. reasons why I wrote the book is to try to bring a kind of a more nuanced conversation around PG&E. And there's of course, to be sure, a lot of blame falls on the company. There's been a lot of internal mismanagement over the years that created a lot of risk. But there's a lot of other factors at play as well. And I'm certain that that's the case in Maui and in everywhere else that we're seeing elevated wildfire risk. And to your point, climate change is real and climate change is creating some really significant challenges right now. The utility industry is, like many other industries, is kind of backward looking in the sense that a lot of decisions are made predicated on the assumption that kind of, the past is a good indication of the future. That relationship is beginning to break down. And so the smart utilities are trying to kind of rethink what this means in the way that they operate. I mean, there's going to need to be some significant operational changes, some significant efforts to try to understand what this means going forward, what new risks are emerging, what needs to be done to address them. And I mean, again, one of the things that utilities are grappling with is the fact that if we have, periods of significant drought, as we've seen, if we have more significant heat waves, it's going to make it so that, we're seeing regions at elevated risk of wildfire because of extremely dry vegetation in large part, which makes it so that if a power line fails, the likelihood of a large catastrophic fire is higher than it's ever been. It might have been that 20 years ago, it could have been easily, you know, contained because of, you know, the moisture of the vegetation and other things. If it's dry as a bone, as we've seen, that's a real challenge to contend with.
Mm-hmm. So before I let you go, Catherine, what are you hoping will be the takeaway moving forward, in the sense of what was uncovered about the campfire in Paradise? And yes, as we wait to learn more about what happened in Maui, you know, what are you hoping, if someone picks up your book, or even, you know, regulators, what are you hoping will be the takeaway as we move forward, so that maybe something like this doesn't happen again?
Sure. So I think that, I mean, if you think about the campfire, the cause was, you know, almost, it was devastatingly simple. To your earlier point, it was, you know, an old hook that broke nearly in half, and it would have been an easy fix, right? But I think in a broader sense, I think the takeaway here is that climate change is creating real operational risk that utilities need to deal with. And I think that as we've discussed climate change as a society, you know, at the regulatory level, at the company level, and just, you know, between us, we're often thinking about ways to reduce carbon emissions, right? I mean, the energy transition, moving to cleaner sources of energy, and that's certainly important in the context of climate change. It's an ongoing transition. It shows no signs of slowing down. But as utilities help in this effort in the energy transition, I think they also need to be thinking about what climate change means from an operational standpoint, and make sure that there's enough resources dedicated to protecting the infrastructure and making it safer as the risks change.
Well, Catherine, I want to thank you so much for coming in and talking with us about this. I really appreciate the conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Catherine Blunt. She covers renewable energy and utilities for the Wall Street Journal. Her team reported on PNG in California and the campfire. She wrote a book called California Burning. Her team also won an award for business investigative journalism, the Thomas L. Stokes Award for Energy and Environmental Reporting, and named a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.